Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well. You can also see more content at dsmsports.net. And of course, follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher Radio and on the website. Really cool show for you guys today. A topic that I've been wanting to delve into for quite a while. It's relatively ubiquitous in sports, looking at how beverage companies, whether it's soft drinks or beer or liquor, are activating with sports events and sports partners. And I'm going to get to pick the brain of Mark Gallo today. He is a longtime veteran in the sports marketing space around beverages, and a really cool conversation with Mark coming ahead. But first, this episode's Helpful Tool. And such a helpful tool is something that you probably have heard before, maybe use it on your desktop, but they have an app now that integrates with your keyboard on your mobile device, and that is Grammarly, Grammarly, and it's an easy, quick way to, well, check your grammar. You know, we're all out to try to avoid those tweets that you go out that you're begging for an edit button, or trying to make sure that you don't cause an incorrect post on Facebook, and then all the comments will be calling you out for it. So it's an easy tool that can help do a quick self check on your device, since you know it's not quite like Microsoft Word, or you'll see an incorrect grammar call out to you right away. So it's a free app that you can download from the App Store, and then it integrates with your keyboard. And once you pull it up with your keyboard, it'll automatically check your grammar and suggest corrections where it went as needed. Now, of course, there's some shorthand that you're going to be using in social media quite a bit, so it may get in the way sometimes, but you don't have to use all their suggestions. And also, there is one caveat where it does hinder the auto-suggest for what you're trying to type if you're prone to typos, as I am myself. So it's definitely, you know, some good and some bad, but you may really enjoy it, especially if you're penning something longer, maybe a longer Instagram post, trying to make sure that you get something right. So if you're tough on grammar, if it's something that you mess up quite a bit and you want to avoid putting something out there on social or digital or any other channels that you're trying to produce, it's a great mobile-friendly way and super easy and native to check your grammar. So give it a shot. Download it, and you'd start using the Grammarly app on your phone today. That's the episode's helpful tool, and I'll be right back to talk all about beverages. You're going to want to open up a cold one after this when I talk to Mark Gallo, and coming up right now. All right, back from this episode's helpful tool. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by someone I've known for a little while now, one of the smartest guys I know in the beverage overall beverage marketing space. I'm joined today on the podcast by Mark Gallo. He is a sales and marketing veteran in the beverage space. And welcome to the podcast today, Mark.
Neil, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. And I know we've tried to do this for some time now, and sometimes timing is everything.
You gotta love it, man. I'm so glad we finally connected on here after so many good offline conversations. Now we just get to record it for everyone else to hear. So before we get into the meat of the discussion, though, we want to hear about your career path, how you got involved in this industry, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Yeah, so beer was my entire career up until now. So I started as an entry-level merchandiser at a local wholesaler in Tucson, Arizona. And then I kind of worked my way in through the Anheuser-Busch network, started off as a contemporary marketing team, actually flew across the country to do national large-scale events, which the wholesaler locally did not have time to train or hire ambassadors. And those were your large-scale NASCAR races, special events from a festival, from Super Bowl to World Series. Just the kind of a real fun, engaging brand building opportunity. Then I worked my way into kind of local media and local marketing in Phoenix and Seattle. And that was a blast. I showed the company that I was able to spend their money very well. They had said, now we're going to ship you to Las Vegas to go and make us some money. And I became one of our key account leaders, managing the MGM hotel and casino properties, along with casual dining spots such as Buffalo Wild Wings, Outback Steakhouse, Applebee's. And that was a little bit of a hybrid blend job, mm-hmm. of using my sales and my marketing pedigrees to drive distribution, create custom programming that also helped draw in traffic to those certain locations. Mm-hmm. Then for the past roughly 4 years, I was a distributor manager that was working with local wholesalers, making sure that they were out there executing our programs, distribution, helping the sales force grow volume, grow share. And that's kind of where it left me to today. I would say one piece of advice, start early, reach out to the local beer distributors out in someone's territory and ask what entry-level job they might have.
Yeah, let's bounce back real quick and go into that a little bit. So I want to hear about, you know, your schooling, going to college, and how you really, you know, became interested in the space and got your foot in the door, so to speak, with AB.
Yeah, I got my foot in the door as I played rugby at the University of Arizona. My head coach, exactly. Big game against USC this weekend. Big game.
Oh, yeah.
It will set us up for future success. So, but back to our original conversation. I played rugby at the University of Arizona. My head coach, Dave Sitton, was the godfather to the two owners of the local wholesaler at the time, which was Golden Eagle Distributing. And they had a promise to the rugby team. Anybody that wanted a job during the summer months, they had a job. So I didn't want to go back home and stay with my parents after my freshman year. So I stayed, played rugby during the summer, enhanced my rugby skills, but at the same time was a driver, assistant, merchandiser, help early in the morning. I think my shift was 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. riding on a truck and doing every entry-level job responsibility, merchandising, down stacking, rotating, building displays, hanging a neon, fixing a neon. So just truly learning the basics of the entire beverage business.
Were you of a drinking age at the time too, or were you working for a beer company that not even 21 yet?
No, I was actually 19. So when I was 19 and 20, I kind of did that entry level stuff. When I turned 21 and they saw that I was out at the bars already, they had a position where I was the brand ambassador at night. So my schedule now had changed from, you know, 5 a.m. to 2 p.m., it kind of did the reverse. I was out from 5 p.m. to kind of 2 a.m. making friends in the bar establishment.
Wow, that is wild. But really cool how that can, you know, basically just building relationships and, you know, making friends at the bars pretty much and being able to talk your way in there is definitely a cool thing to hear about. But I do want to then start to delve into, you know, how they knew you were good at your job early on. You know, I'm sure anecdotally people could say, yeah, Mark knows his stuff, but especially when you're a field marketer, field ambassador, and working at some of the events that you guys were activating at, you know, how did you guys start to track the effectiveness there? What was the goal when it came to engaging fans on site at a World Series, at a, you know, whatever event you may want to put in there?
You know, I think in this new age of every kind of thing is being tracked, commoditized, analyzed, it's no different than back then. It's just different techniques and different things. So at the end of the day, we all looked at ourselves and say, hey, did we make one friend for the company? If so, it was a successful day. But back then it was kind of when we were releasing new brands or had certain things going on in local marketplaces, it was how many photos, you know, were we executing with consumers with our products? How many people tried our product? How many people were aware of the product? Mm-hmm. And it was just simple measures. And sometimes it was on a dumbed down Excel sheet at the time.
Mm-hmm. So did you see it quickly start to evolve? And I mean, now, obviously, I love the idea of just making one friend, making people feel good about your brand, having them try your brand. At a certain point, did the light bulb, not a light bulb, I guess, but the capabilities go off and say, okay, and how can we know who that friend is? How can we retarget, probably the key word, these audiences that we know did sample our brand at this event? When did that start to come into play as digital became a bigger part of the picture?
You know, I know the digital space was always a tricky one for beverage and alcoholic brands in particular, just due to kind of age gating and putting that spin on it.
Yeah.
But it was always an extension to communicate with our consumers. And that's how I think the alcoholic beverage companies looked at it. And they wanted to talk to consumers where consumers were going. And that's just the evolution. We will always go where consumers are going, whether it's for first to market, second to market, or a little bit more of a cautious tail of waiting for some legal things to clear.
Yeah, what I think is cool about the beverage industry is that it really is, maybe more than any other, a place where digital and offline, physical, whatever you want to call it, traditional, is really married. And you have a lot of a digital activation. You have a lot of fans that even with those obstacles can, you start to see a lot more activations happening there. But there still is so much happening on the ground. And, I guess what I would be interested in learning about is when did you guys start to put those things together and say, okay, hey, we're doing this event on site. How can there be, whether it's a digital component to it that extends it out to the masses, or some sort of way to capture that fan information? Was there an early on activation where all of a sudden you were able to go back to your bosses and say, hey, we're now collecting names, or we're now, not just sampling, but being able to then, retarget these fans with a digital ad and really just start to connect it all together in one big happy circle, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, let me give you two polar opposites. So We at AV tried and tested our own content reality internet forum, and it was called Bud.TV, and we were going to host all of our original content, ask creators for content, and that kind of failed, right? It just was not the right time. No one was kind of doing that, so it flopped. Now, last year, you kind of see the evolution of activation and consumers, and that was brought to life in when the Cubs won the World Series. An hour after they had won it, Budweiser had worked with the agency, and I want to say it was VaynerMedia, and they turned around in an hour a commercial that featured the voice of Harry Caray celebrating the Cubs win. Now, obviously, he had passed, and he wasn't there to truly see the moment of the Cubs win a World Series, but the different ways that Budweiser and VaynerMedia went about capturing user-generated content out in the bar, out in homes, they funneled that together and instantaneously had a commercial that celebrated Harry Caray's voice from previous games, and then fans celebrating through the streets, homes, bars, inside the stadium. So you can kind of see how it all connected. And I remember when we would collect email addresses back in the day when consumers signed up and took a photo behind a step-in repeat, that we would use that email address to target certain promotional offers in the off-premise. So most of our activations were at bars. We helped drive consumers potentially back into a grocery store or a C-store with a coupon for $2 off a 12-pack, 6-pack, 18-pack. I forget the exact details, but you can kind of see the evolution of using one form to help drive into the next channel.
No, I think it's a really, really good example. I love hearing that. And I think a key there, a really cool juxtaposition there too, is UGC. And really, the idea that it is more about the fans who are drinking it, that, and being able to have it more that social component, I guess. I mean, you look back and the quote unquote legacy, I'm gonna date both of us now, of the earliest memories of the, I guess, viral or the well known Budweiser promotions, and you think about the frogs, Budweiser on Super Bowl ad, or you think about the what's up guys or whatever, and it's sort of the early beer commercials that quote unquote became mainstream or became well known. And now we think about more of a storytelling aspect, we think about more of a true content aspect, and it's content you're not just watching because it's an amusing commercial, but it's content that is truly valuable content. Now I'm curious, when that started evolving in the beer space, whether it was just even activities on site that had nothing to do with sampling beer, or again, just actual content involved with an athlete that, again, maybe only tangentially mentioned the product. When did that start to come into play, and all of a sudden you guys realize that it doesn't always have to be about, a glass of beer at the end of the day?
I think one of the legacy iconic spokesperson for any alcoholic beverage was Bud McKenzie. He was the original party animal. Mm-hmm, he put Bud Light onto that map of being social, being fun, being young, and it kind of ran its course, and then he appealed to people that weren't of drinking age. So then Bud Light tried to and did a very good job of moving its messaging along, and then came along the activations that Bud Light capitalized on. They truly built platforms from the ground up. Rock, Paper, Scissors was a national campaign for about 4 to 5 years that ran its course, but it truly captivated the essence of that brand. There was regional and national tournaments. People were flown to Las Vegas for the finals, where I believe somebody won $100,000 for displaying Rock, Paper, Scissors. After that campaign ran its course, then they had Port Paradise, where we sent consumers on a 3-day cruise to the Bahamas to celebrate the brand, to be with the brand, and experience the brand in certain ways with their friends. And then most recently, from a large-scale activation behind Bud Light, is the Bud Light Hotel. And that went to mostly the Super Bowls and some marquee sporting events, i.e. March Madness. And that was a way to create content, to engage consumers via sampling exhibitions, introducing them to brand extensions, but at the same time, having the space that we could bring retailers to showcase what the power of Bud Light was. Because retailers obviously are all competitive, want to drive traffic to the store to separate themselves. So our key accounts team would leverage these spaces and places and events to showcase what our brands truly meant to the overall category.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting angle too that I have that you just kind of brought up there indirectly, is how you guys do have, you had two audiences. You had your consumers, but you also had your retailers, and you're trying to make sure that Budweiser wins over the hearts and minds and shelf space or refrigerator space, wherever you want to put it, of the retailers as well. Does that come into play when you think about digital and social and making sure, or is it really just, you know, just showing them the results? Hey, we're driving more foot traffic to you, or, you know, this is our share of voice, this is our share of market, and, you know, you need to have it if you want to have people come into your store over others.
It's a little bit of hospitality, as you just want to leverage your scale and what separates you from your competition. Mm-hmm. And second of all, yeah, you want to showcase what your beverage is to the overall share, to the category, to culture. I mean, that's a very big thing nowadays with social media and digital, right? You don't have to run television ads. You don't have to buy billboards to people to know about your brand. And sometimes the larger companies that are out there, the legacy ones, are still a little bit slow to adapt and react in the new technology space, just because of the hierarchy of getting 15 different clearances to kind of run something. But it's an important channel that always mixes back of showcasing how you are different and what you bring from a customer perspective.
Mm-hmm. And going back even to some of those bigger activations, like the Rock, Paper, Scissors tournament, like the cruise, how is that at the end of the day measured success wise? You know, how do you know? Is it just, you know, are you looking at all the content that comes out of it and the impressions, it earned media, earned impressions you guys earn on a digital or social or even traditional platforms, and or is it really just a, you know, looking at it from an overall brand reach, brand activation? I'm just trying to think of how you guys envision those things and ultimately how that leads to, you know, what a successful execution looks like.
You know, different departments have different KPIs associated to all these different things, but at the end, probably the overall brand health is probably the most important, and the trial and awareness of the brand is probably the most measured from the brand teams on that. Some of these things that we owned the space and ran, yeah, we would want to kind of know what the volume was from a sales lift perspective, but those executions are more kind of at retail. So when we're the exclusive, when Bud Light is the exclusive sponsor of, you know, the NFL, they're going to be able to go and show the NFL, hey, we took your trademark and your guys' teams that we did, you know, let's say 28 out of the 32 local teams, we built, you know, 10,000 incremental displays for Super Bowl. We put you on 100,000 glasses in the on-premise segment in the state of Arizona and Nevada. So it's showcasing everybody what the true tangible deliverables were.
And was social always valued early on? You want, you guys, you know, took care to say, we reached this many fans on Facebook, on their website, on their Twitter, or I think, you know, because we've grown up with the space that early on, and maybe to some degree even still now, social is almost seen as a bonus or a throw-in, and I think we know better, but it still seems sometimes is just a small, small, insignificant portion of the deal. But has there always been a is there a pretty good weight placed on, yeah, we want to see, you know, the fans are reaching on social. We want this shoulder content to really amplify what we're doing in these traditional spaces.
You know, I think more so in the past 5 years, alcoholic brands and beverages have embraced social to be kind of a leading point within negotiation with sports teams and sports leagues. I think at the very beginning, it was kind of just an added value. Hey, we just want to kind of reach eyeballs and impressions. And now, so it's, hey, how do you guys help us drive in that space? And I think when I search Twitter, one of the teams that does it the best is the Broncos and their Bud Light partnership. They've got a full team dedicated to just kind of that, of creating content and creating a synergistic partnership. And I believe that Anheuser-Busch has now yearly sports summits for the different leagues of sharing best practices in that digital space. And I think now Anheuser-Busch, you know, has some requirements out of teams and leagues to help create content, push content, and truly drive conversation in the digital channel.
So is it generally an agency of record that if Bud Light wants to do a Snapchat filter for a big game, or even just wants to create a YouTube video, where is this all this content coming from? Is it an agency? Is it co-creating content with a team? Are some of these companies starting to have in-house content capabilities as well?
You know, Neil, I'm not too sure on that. As the past kind of 3 years, I was more in the sales function. So I just reaped the benefits of seeing something come through in an email from our trademarking division saying, hey, these things are now available. And I think it's always been at a national level. The next level will be able to get down those resources to the local wholesalers and the local field teams so that they can do those on an individual basis with their local teams, with their marathons, with their golf tournaments. And I think Michelob Ultra is testing that this weekend at the New York Marathon, but they will have a custom Snapchat filter for Michelob Ultra and the New York Marathon. But then they will pipe that down to wholesalers that might have a race in Tennessee or something up in Seattle or out in Denver. So I think that's the next evolution, is how do they take that national umbrella, that national blueprint, and share it locally with teams to execute with consistency and the same messaging.
Yeah, and I wonder how that's starting to – how all that connectivity, of lack of a better way to put it, is starting to penetrate at the POP level as well. And I think, you know, this can come in a number of ways, whether it's, you know, take a picture and use this hashtag at this POP, or, you know, we're even getting in now, you're seeing a lot, whether it's Coca-Cola or Budweiser or whoever is starting to do like augmented reality, you know, scan this can and you'll get a video come to life. You know, how is that a trend that's not going anywhere, to really marry the physical and the digital and have those points of purchase really be more quote-unquote connected?
You know, I think it is. It's not necessarily a sales-driving piece, right? I don't believe that they are truly measuring, hey, how many people have downloaded this Snapchat filter and then went out and purchased it as a true direct kind of correlation. But I truly think they're trying to amass a ton of data about our consumers, how they interact with our brand, what they might think of the brand, because then that will have a chain reaction in the retail space of what the different signs, posters might look like and might communicate to our customers.
That definitely makes sense. And it's cool to see all the different strategies out there, everything from, you know, Larry Culpepper, the Dr. Pepper guy, and ambassadors, in addition to sort of the ongoing campaigns. I did want to shift briefly, having a great conversation with Mark Gallo, a longtime sales and marketing veteran in the beverage space, and talk a little bit about, you know, looking at the brick and mortar and the liquor store, or the store to go buy your soft drink, the grocery store, or, you know, wherever you're going to get drinks. And we're starting to see, obviously, a lot of disruptors in the industry. I mean, Amazon, and you can just get a 12-pack of whatever, Coke or Budweiser or whatever, delivered via drone even. You got Drizzly, which is, you know, really capturing that quote-unquote niche space of beer and liquor. And, you know, is this a legitimate fear by a lot of the brick-and-mortar store owners that, you know, we're going to get overtaken, or are they trying to latch on and work with those companies? You know, how are these disruptors, you know, affecting the industry now and in the very near future?
I mean, I think the biggest one obviously is Amazon, who obviously wants to go direct to consumer and kind of cut out the middlemen. But at the same time, there is still a place for brick and mortar. It's upon them working with their partners to create compelling reasons why it's beneficial to come in store. You know, it's the same thing that's going on in the hotel industry, right? Airbnb is trying to dislodge consumers from staying in hotels and staying in a, you know, quiet environment and the house locally. But the large scale hotels have things to offer. And I think you're beginning to see retailers starting to come together and realize what their value proposition to any customer is. And they understand that they're asking a customer to drive, find parking, and wait in line. And you're seeing different price actions, promotion schedules, and in-store interactions that you never had before. And you know, as much as consumers value their time, that is why Drizzly, Saucy, Minibar, all these the delivery apps are out there, because there is a large contingent of consumer base that don't want to leave their house, are happy to pay a premium to select it and have somebody drive it to them. It's just the right state at the right time.
How does an AB view those disruptors? Like, is it just another channel to move your product, and is it a friend or a foe? I'm curious how that all fits together.
You know, that is a very good question. To get their arms around it, AB started a separate entity called XZ Ventures, and that's their sole mission, is this digital space of how is the Amazon and all these delivery companies disrupting it. So that's something to be on the lookout for the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road of what that space looks like. AB, Miller Coors, Heineken, Constellation, those guys obviously want to test the waters now while it's fresh. So once it's full scale, they're up and running, just like it's a retail that you drive to.
That's fascinating. I imagine there's a whole other component with social as well. Like, maybe, you know, you're up in the Bay Area, I'm down here in L.A. During the game next Sunday, I can, or during the Arizona game tomorrow against USC, I can maybe send you a beer, you know, and let me buy this round. And, you know, you get one beer, I get one beer delivered to my house. So I could totally see
it. Hey, man, if Elon Musk has his way, I will be on the Hyperloop on Saturday morning, and I'll happily bring you a six-pack in 30 minutes.
Oh, God, love it. Just a few more minutes left here with Mark Gallo, sales and marketing veteran in the beverage space, who is definitely an encyclopedia of the stuff. It's awesome to pick your brain. I did want to tell you, you mentioned it briefly before, and that is the challenge of making sure that you are age appropriate. And, you know, I think Snapchat was an early one that people started going, you know, are we allowed to do this? And I'm sure Facebook and Twitter and those other platforms as well. And, you know, even websites, most of the beer websites have a, you know, are you 18, are you 21 or older to see this? Is that just kind of like an unspoken worry that, or are there active steps being taken to make sure that these ads are being seen by the right people? Because, I mean, you don't think of, like, we talked about the old Super Bowl ads for Budweiser, and you don't think of, make sure that you're 21 over before you can see this ad. I mean, they know that kids are going to see it, yet on digital, it seems like there's more of a, I guess, of a burden to make sure that you're not actively targeting those young underage drinkers. I mean, where is the industry when it comes to that, the age mechanism on digital and social? Or is it just kind of, you know, we do what we need to do, and, you know, we'll probably break some rules along the way, but as long as no one is upset, we'll be okay. I'm just kind of curious where that state is right now.
No, you know, Neil, I don't truly remember what it was, but there was a certain percentage that the ad world needed to clear in terms of viewers. On average, had to be above 21%, and I forget if that was, you know, 70, 80, 90% had to be of legal age or drink it, and then you could do it. But I think just in the digital space, it's of the utmost importance as the beer companies that are leading, AB, Heineken, Constellation, Diageo, it's just within their interest to make sure that they are acting appropriate and targeting in the correct demo. And they will go a great length to make sure that they are upholding to those standards.
And how does that apply to content? Like if Budweiser does a fun interview, or if they do like a famous pro athlete drives a Budweiser truck and surprises a store. You know, when it comes to content, is there a difference between branded content and an ad promoting the drinking of alcohol or beer to an underage fan? Or is it really, as long as it's a hard beverage brand, a beer liquor brand, that they can't actively target underage folks?
No, to my knowledge, at least at AB, we follow the ad council policy, plus then internally AB set their own criteria of who can star in ads, meaning, you know, do they appear to be 25 plus? Nowhere could, you know, beer and ads be used in inappropriate ways.
Right. But if it was just like a fun piece of content, regardless of, and let's assume that the person in the ad is whatever, 40, 50 years old, is it okay for an 18-year-old to be targeted with that branded content, as long as it's not, you know, showing a, you know, ad, telling them to go drink beer, if it's just more of a brand play? Or is that still not kosher, as far as you know?
As far as I know, from any of the alcohol, beer, wine, or spirits, that's still not appropriate or on there.
Gotcha. It's definitely interesting and a fine line, I'm sure, when you're like, this is just entertaining content. It's not an ad for beer. It's just a brand activation. But you definitely want to, CYA, so to speak, and not get in any trouble.
Here's the perfect example. When Bud and Bud Light, Miller Light, Coors Light, Heineken, Corona, Modelo, you kind of name it, when they are out handing out, you know, let's say keychains or temporary tattoos at sporting events or engaging consumers in tailgates, if you aren't 21 and over, you can't receive, you know, a keychain. Even though it's not promoting you to buy beer, do anything, you can't even have a t-shirt or hat. You have to have someone that's 21 and plus accompany you to get it. So if there was a kid that ran up and he wanted, you know, the hat, well, he'd have to bring his brother, sister, uncle, cousin, grandma, grandpa that was 21. And we would legally be able to give it to the adult. And what he did with it from there,
right,
that was his choosing. But even though a keychain wasn't going to drive the 19-year-old to go, you know, buy Bud or Bud Light or anything in that nature, we always stuck to the 21+.
Which is fascinating. I'm sure it's always a game of a game almost, because that 19-year-old is probably among the most coveted demographics that beer companies don't want to say they're trying to reach, but certainly want to try to reach, because that's the, you know, you want to try to win that brand loyalty while they are a, you know, freshman, sophomore in college, and you know, you want to win them over before they become an adult and a 21-year-old and can go and buy whatever brand they want.
Once they turn 21, they can have the most fun with all the alcoholic brands that they want.
Real quick before we get into the shareable stat, having a great conversation now with Mark Gallo. I did want to touch on how social is really affecting the beer and liquor industry overall. I know I'm from San Diego, and I think that's a place where microbrews are growing immensely. And you know, you see something like what's that one that I'm trying to think of here? Oh, it's escaped my mind right now. There's one that really blew up from San Diego and became a nationwide brand. And I wonder how social is affecting the alcohol and beer industry, whether it's making microbrews more, making it more aware, making people aware there are a lot of these beer communities, these beer snob communities, for lack of a better way to put it. And if there is even, a social presence, there might be a Facebook for beer connoisseurs. I'm not really sure myself. But I'm curious as to what you can see from your perspective as to how social is starting to allow more brands and more just companies in the alcohol and beer space to sort of rise.
It's given a voice to the craft distillers and the craft brewers and the craft wineries that are out there that don't have large-scale marketing budgets to do activations. It's given a direct line of communication between consumers and brewers, and it's put them on the map. It's given them platforms that can go national, even if they're only locally, all for free. And it just takes content, dedication, and someone committed to the consumer in the digital presence. And I think by their nature, a craft brewery is always scrappy. They are lean, and they always have a voice and want to share their story. Now they can put it on YouTube. They can put it on Instagram. They can put it on Facebook. They can, have a conversation with every customer about their packaging imagery, showcase up and coming releases through Twitter. Mm-hmm. So it's just giving them a voice that never once was there.
I wonder too, does that almost scare the big names, the Miller Coors, the ABs of the world, or are they they realize it's just another playing field that they can dominate themselves if they put enough effort into it?
They realize it's a space that they probably were late to react to, mm-hmm. and now they're building their team to scale at a rapid rate in that digital world, whether it's content, whether it's monitors, whether it's program developers. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see how it's definitely a lot different than it was 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago, and even 5 years ago. And from the day you first started coming out of school, driving the truck from 5 a.m. till 2 p.m., it's definitely come a long way, and it's only going to change and get even more interactive, more engaging, and more of a blurred line between content and advertising, which is really cool to pick your brain a little bit on all this stuff. We're going to have a little more fun with you. We're going to have another round coming up in our quick-hitting segment. But first, it's episode's shareable stat, and we'll be right back with that.
Lots of fun talking to Mark Gallo, learning all about marketing and all the little details that go on in the beverage space. And definitely someone that's good to talk to you about that. And we'll have a little more fun with Mark in our another round segment. We're going to have another round with him, so stay tuned for that. But first, it's episode's shareable stat. And so the shareable stat looks at YouTube, and that looks at Kevin Durant, who recently started, or relatively recently, about 6 months ago now, started his own YouTube channel, and he now has over 460,000 subscribers and video content that consistently gets in the six figures worth of views. And that's a YouTube view, which, for those of you not familiar, Facebook counts a video view as 3 seconds, whereas YouTube counts it only when a user has watched for over 30 seconds. Unless the video is shorter than 30 seconds, then a completion counts as a view. So definitely a very different metric there. And recently as well, Juju Smith-Schuster, a wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who is growing in acclaim a little bit with his active social media presence, also jumped on YouTube. And perhaps part of a bigger trend as we see more teams, more athletes, begin to pay more attention to YouTube. Why? Well, because the users are there. You think Facebook has a lot of users? YouTube is right there behind them and vastly overtaking any other social media rival in that space as well. Not only that, YouTube is, as many know, the second largest search engine in the world behind Google. So a lot of users are spending time looking for things on YouTube, and also, of course, opposed to Facebook, which, you know, does not have the lifespan. YouTube videos, YouTube content can live forever, and it continues to rack up views over time as users stumble upon it in a YouTube spiral, or something they search for brings it up, or someone shares it after a while and noticing it, or someone jumps onto a channel and all of a sudden they see all the other great videos on there. And Kevin Durant is one of the first that really jumped on there, wanted to brand one for himself. He's aware of the brand that he has, and now nearly 500,000 fans get pings whenever he posts a video. So definitely an opportunity there to continue to grow one's brand, grow consistent reach. And when you can tell a partner that you can consistently reach over six figures for over 30 seconds at a time, that is a powerful statement to make. So that's a little shareable stat. Definitely, if you are not actively involved in YouTube, it may be time to look at it. Whether you're a team, a league, an individual, it's a very strong platform that is now maybe starting to get its due once again. So, 460,000 number of subscribers that Kevin Durant has after just 6 months, and this, with the NBA season just having started, who knows where he'll be by the end of the year. But that is this episode's shareable stat, and we'll be right back to have another round with Mark Gallo, a longtime veteran in the sports marketing space for beverages.
All right, joined again by Mark Gallo. He's a longtime veteran in the sales marketing and the beverage space. Had a great conversation on all things beer, liquor, soft drinks. If you don't want to drink by now, then you haven't been listening. Mark, we had a great time sharing a couple of drinks or whatever you want to call it. Are you now ready to have another round?
I am.
Let's do it. All right. Number one, you may have mentioned this already, but your favorite beer campaign. It could be offline, could be online, could be any sort. Your favorite beer campaign you've seen over the years.
I've got two. Mm-hmm. One, because I was biased, because I worked on it. It was the Bud Light Ted Ferguson Daredevil campaign. Nice. And if you don't know what that is, please go YouTube it. It is hilarious. And then one was from a competitor, and that was Dos Equis, the most interesting man in the world. And both of those, I thought, brought new customers and had repeat purchases for the beverage and beer industry.
And it truly did, for both those, activate the brand in a very, very relevant manner. I think now people think Dos Equis, they thought, and they know what the brand's all about. And same with the Ted Ferguson character. They knew what the brand was about. And I think that's when you know you're in that sweet spot. That it's not just, you know, a cheap laugh, but it's something that really, you know, helps tell your brand story and helps, reinforce what that brand is. I love that stuff. There's so many good examples. Those are a couple of really good ones. Number two for you. The platform, you can take this any way you want, could be the social media platform, could be digital, could be offline. The platform that you think is the most effective for beverage marketers?
I'll go high level and then a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. High level, the telephone. It's
interesting.
The supercomputer, it's the way to consumers. Everyone wants to create an app. Everybody wants to be on the forefront of consumers, so it's there. But I think from a digital platform, it's got to be Facebook and Instagram, just from the sheer reach and targeting capabilities that those companies offer.
How much does international come into play? I mean, and you're obviously focused on selling in North America, I'm sure, and your regions that you were responsible for. But is that always a part of what they're trying to do as a brand? Is how can we get ourselves to be recognized worldwide? Or is North America really just 95% of it?
No, I think it's an evolution that continues to go. We are shopping where consumers are. The last acquisition that AB made was for SAB Miller, and that gave them a new footprint that they essentially were not selling beer in. Mm-hmm. So global beer is huge. It just happens to be that the United States is a crown jewel for most companies in terms of the volume that is produced.
It definitely makes sense. Number three for you. You made your way around quite a few stores during with AB, whether it was Tucson or Seattle or anywhere in between. So tell me the coolest store setup that you've seen for a beer promotion.
Kind of like question number one, my favorite beer campaign. I've got two. One, as a biased answer, anything that involves the Clydesdale and the full hitch, whether that was a parade, a grand opening of a store, or they were just in town and wanted to be kind of shown off. The Clydesdales are the most iconic beer asset that was ever created. Then I would say the Heineken House at the Olympics. That is top notch in terms of activating a country, a brand, and showcasing athletes, fans, consumers.
Yeah, and you talk about going to that probably knowing that you're going to get a bunch of Instagram selfies or Twitter photos of athletes that are in there and saying, I'm in the Heineken House, and just so much earned media that way as well. I forgot about that one. That was a really cool one.
Yep.
All right, number four, Mark, going back to your days as a Wildcat. Tell me the most memorable U of A game, University of Arizona game, that you attended.
I do not have one yet for the sole fact that U of A has yet to play in the Rose Bowl game. We are the only original Pac-10 school not to play in it, so that will be the most memorable game to go to.
You've gotten so close, too. How about were you able to see some pretty cool basketball games while you were there?
Basketball games, yes. That was kind of to be expected, but football is what we all want when we attended there. So still waiting for that day that I can release my secret funds to go and have a great time and celebrate U of A at the Rose Bowl.
Hey, well, depending on how the game goes against SC, that Pac-12 South might be a possibility, and who knows from there.
Very true.
All right, number five. This is a fun one here. So obviously there's that other school in Arizona in Tempe, where they have the pitchforks and whatnot. So tell me, what do Arizona students say about ASU students, Arizona State?
Neil, to be frank, it's not appropriate for this conversation.
Oh, I love it. Having gone to a school myself with a bitter rival, you know, we always like to talk not in too kind of terms about the rival school, but I'll leave this to the imagination, I guess, in terms of what U of A students say about ASU students. Oh, I love that. All right, number six for you. This can take this any number of directions, but just looking overall in sports, you know, whether it's leagues, teams, media, anything you want, tell me the best beer partnership that you see playing out in sports right now or ever.
So I kind of got three for you here. Mm-hmm. I got Heineken and Stalker, and that's on a global perspective, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Heineken has always been synonymous with soccer in Europe and Asia and everywhere else in the country. Now they are accelerating the growth with MLS here in the United States, and you kind of see the synergistic effects of their global development of soccer now in the U.S. to help bring it to the forefront.
Yeah, it's a great one.
I would say from a brand perspective, we've got two. Michelob Ultra with golf, marathon, and kind of that CrossFit extreme workout culture. It's just a brand that breathes certain qualities about health, that they stand behind it and they activate it in a premiumized way.
Yeah.
And then last is a new one, and it's a natural fit. I don't believe they've hit their tipping point in terms of synergy and creative, but I truly think the messaging is on par, and it's Coors Light and the NFL. Both are cold. Both are hard-hitting, and both want to be that underdog story that everybody comes for.
Nice. Oh, really, really good. It spanned the gamut there, too. And I definitely noticed that Michelob Ultra with their billboards around, and the only beer brand I see that actually like wants to shout out how many calories and carbs they have. It definitely does cater to that more health-conscious audience, and so it makes sense for them to be involved in those industries. And Heineken and soccer is one that you see all the time, and I've loved seeing how they've really become a great part of MLS on digital and social, and as well as offline platforms. I just some great examples there, and I'm glad you're able to bring these to light, because I don't think people realize how impressive these are that are playing out every day across sports and across digital and social. All right, speaking of that, tell me, and you can take this whatever direction you want as well. I know it could be tough. Tell me the beer brand that does the best job on social media.
The best best beer brand, I would have to say there's arguably two, and they're both craft breweries for a different reason. I would think Allagash, from their use of storytelling through imagery, they must pay their photographer or whoever shoots their photos for their Instagram and Twitter millions of dollars, because it just breathes the essence of what Allagash is about. And then on the flip side, Dogfish. They are authentic. They use YouTube to communicate consistently with their fans and consumers, and they are always active and rapidly changing on Twitter with the times. They're really relevant with their responses, and they're candid. And you can always get a hold of the owner, Sam, on it.
Very nice. Geez, just listening to you describe those, I feel like there's some easy insights and lessons to be heard from, whether it's, you know, beautiful imagery or authenticity and engagement. It definitely shows why you picked those. I love those examples. Number eight for you. There is, we kind of spoke offline jokingly a little bit before we started recording about all the different beverages out there and how there's just so many different categories now, it seems like. Every type of, I think, fruit and anything that grows on a tree is now made into water, it seems like, in some form. There's all these different fitness waters. There's soft drinks with different types of sugars. There's liquor. There's beer. There's flavor liquor. I got to stop rambling here and just ask you number eight, which is the most interesting beverage category right now, and why?
To me, the most interesting beverage category is that premium water segment. And it, you know, flavored water, mineral sparkling water, healthy lifestyle water. It's just water. Water is once again booming, because when they talk to the athletes about, you know, their energy drinks or their sports drinks, yeah, that was only, you know, let's say 10% of their consumption in any given day or week. The rest of the time, all those athletes are drinking water, just simple water. Whether it was mineral, whether it's sparkling, flavored, they drink 90% water throughout the day. And so it's such a huge market that those companies, those brands are redefining what it is water should taste like.
Oh, it's so interesting. Everyone's trying to enhance water, make it taste better, make it easier to drink. And the original performance enhancing, not even a drug, just the thing you used to do is just be hydrated, drink water. And I think people are finally catching up to that now, and it definitely leaves open a lot of possibilities. It's really cool. All right, number nine. We always ask about food on this podcast because I am a fat kid at heart. Tell me the best – so you spent a lot of time in Phoenix. Tell me the best food to get in Phoenix, and also going back to your college days in Tucson, the best food to get in Tucson.
All right, for Phoenix, probably my favorite restaurant. Every time I'm in there, I make sure I at least have dinner once there, sometimes even twice. It's Olive and Ivy in kind of downtown Scottsdale. Great culinary, kind of American Italian cuisine, but the atmosphere is remarkable. Everybody is friendly, service is top-notch, and it's just a great quality dish from the appetizer to dessert. And should you head down to Tucson, Arizona, you got to get a slice of pizza from Frog and Firkin on University Avenue.
Okay.
Your quintessential college establishment and some of the best pizza around.
And how about, here's a curveball for you. Tell me if, I'm not going to get morbid and talk about like your last drink ever, but if you had to pick one beer that you sit down, you had one beer left to have in your life, or there's one top beer, what would be that beer? What are you sipping that you could choose one thing?
One beer?
Yes, sir.
My last beer will be a Bud Light Lime.
Bud Light Lime. All right. We now that's high praise. That's high praise for sure. All right. Number 10 for you. We talked about Arizona eventually, hopefully getting to the Rose Bowl, maybe even this year, still open as an opportunity. But tell me, looking across the state, which professional Arizona team, so you got definitely all the leagues covered, which professional Arizona team will next win a title in their sport?
That is easy. I'm a Giants fan, so so I will not say the Diamondbacks. I'm a 49er fan, so I will not say the Cardinals. And I got no horse in this because I'm not necessarily a diehard NBA fan, but I will say the Phoenix Suns.
The Phoenix Suns just fired their coach after the first two games of the season. They're on their way to a championship.
Hey man, they modeled themselves after University of Arizona with their quarterback. Put in the number two guy and catapult yourself to winning.
They have been doing much better since, so I'll give you that. So there you go. You heard it here first. When the Warriors era ends, the Phoenix Suns will come out on top. All right, Mark, had a great time with our another round segment. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Someone on Twitter usually, or a blogger, who they are and why they're worth following.
Wow. I truly forgot about this kind of question. But if I were to recommend people to follow someone within kind of the beverage space, it would be Chris Fornari. And his Twitter handle is at Brewbound Fern. So it's BREWBOUNDFURN. He is the editor of Brewbound, which is a subsidiary of BevNet, and he handles all the late-breaking news from the craft world. So whether they are being acquired, they've got a new distribution plan, or a new sponsorship agreement, he usually is one of the top guys to break all of the news. And he is well-connected in that community, and he's a very passionate Bay Area sports fan. So
very interesting. So there you go. You got the Woj or Adam Schefter, whoever you are, of the beer industry. All right. And how about yourself, Mark? Where can we find you and on anywhere on digital and social?
I am most active and easiest to find on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is at Gullo, GUHLO. And a side story about that, that is how majority of the Starbucks barista would write my name, because I would say Gallo, but they would understand it Gullo, I guess, and that's what they would write on my cups for the longest time, and then it just stuck.
Wow. So there you go. Make sure to hit up Mark. He's a great follow. Really just a lot of good stuff, not just on the beer industry, but the beverage industry overall, and just fun stuff of smart campaigns out there, whether online or offline. And Mark, just you are a wealth of knowledge in this space, and there's no one else I wanted to talk about with this, and it's been really cool getting to learn more about this industry and all your years in it. It's just really cool to pick your brain, and we appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Cheers, Neil. Thank you for having me, and eventually we will share a beer in person again.
Hey, this time in January, or maybe next January, we'll have a Bud Light Lime down at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena and taking a Wildcats game.
Cheers.
Thanks so much again to Mark Gallo for offering a ton of great insight and knowledge about the beverage space. Just obviously a big part of the sports business world, and something that we see a lot of times in front of us, but may not know what goes into it, how it all fits together, and where it may go from here. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening and downloading. As always, you can find the podcast on Stitcher Radio and Apple Podcasts. And you can find more content episodes at dsmsports.net. And please hit me up, your host, Neil Horowitz, on Twitter at NJH287 or on LinkedIn or on the website. And until next time, I'll see you on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.